great NBA insider, CBS Sports NBA. Of course, he's heard weekly here on Salt City Hoops, at Talk Hoops. Zach, thanks for taking a few minutes to join us here on The Morning Drive.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So I want to ask you about that. Very eloquent. LeBron, obviously smart guy, been around, but his last phrase was he wanted to get back to a place they've never been. If you can take me back to a place I've never been, now that's something.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that all the comparisons, all the analogies, all the metaphors, I don't know if they're all going to make sense.
No.
I also know they probably don't have to make sense.
No.
Right?
No, and I'm just kidding. I'm just having fun with him. I mean, he probably had some champagne in him when he went out there and talked, and who knows. But it all sounded good until get back to a place we've never been. But anyway, he can say anything he wants right about now, can't he? I mean, I'm fairly stunned at the outcome. Not watching the game as it developed. And, you know, you get to Game 7, anything's possible. But if you had told me after Game 4, even with the suspension, that this would happen, I would have said there's no way.
Well, yeah, and you even look back at Game 5. I mean, Steph Curry just missed a lot of shots he usually makes. Harrison Barnes missed a lot of open shots. Like, they could have won that game even without Draymond Green. They just slipped through their hands, and Kyrie Irving was ridiculous, and
yep.
LeBron was ridiculous, and they, you know, they made it work for them to survive. But then they kept just building a little bit more for the next game, a little bit more mm-hmm. for the next game, and the Warriors never regained that form that made them so great all year.
That's a great point. You could just see the confidence. I think, you know, maybe the Cavs didn't think they could, and then all of a sudden they win their Game 5, and they're like, well, maybe. Maybe we can.
and that's all it takes, right?
Right.
It takes that one. I mean, these guys are so good, and LeBron is so good, and all it takes is that one little bit of, hey, this door is open, or this door is open a little bit. Let's kick it open.
Right, and I kind of like the way he physically tried to bump Steph near the end of the series, last few games. He tried to get, you know, be that bully, slapping shots around, getting right up in him, talking, mumbling. You know, I kind of like that a little bit. That kind of was a team leader thing, but also, I mean, you see how delicate even a great team is, and you lose Bogut. 10 or 15 minutes doesn't look like much, but he's your starting center. He's a little bit of your physicality. You lose that. You lose a rotation player. And then Iguodala, Game 6, was useless. And I don't know, you know, he tried last night. And he didn't look like he was in pain, but he just didn't also look like the finals MVP. So, you know, it's delicate when you pull out a couple of guys. Ask the Cavs about last year, right?
Oh, yeah. And that's, I mean, sometimes that's what it is. It's being healthy or not even healthy, but healthy enough at the right time. And finding that groove. And you're right about Andrew Bogut. And it's not just the defensive end. I mean, on offense, he sets some incredible screens.
Yep.
Not all of them legal, but he sets some incredible screens to get those shooters open. And without that, you know, they're just – you couldn't play Draymond Green 48 minutes at center because it's just unfair. And they tried to get minutes out of Festus Ezeli. They tried to get minutes out of Anderson Barajal. And they just couldn't get anything. And they just needed about 10 minutes in that game last night to really give them some kind of quality center minutes, and they just could never find it.
Right, and Tristan Thompson, you know, when he got the $92 million, some people may have eye-rolled, but, man, he works hard. He is working. He's making you put a body on him every single time on the offensive glass, and he had a couple of lefty shots that went in somehow, and, you know, he and Kevin Love, I thought they mishandled Love. I don't really think they know how to use him, but he just played. The 14 boards, 9 points were crucial.
Oh, they were, and you know, for as bad as Kevin Love has been in his role, whatever, however inconsistent that is this year, and as bad as they've been at using him, the biggest play of his career was a defensive
yes.
stop. And he was isolated against Steph Curry,
yes.
and you can't say enough about that defensive possession because you know Curry usually cooks just about anybody in that situation, and he stuck with him, and he handled all the fakes and all the dribble moves and everything and just never allowed him to get that Curry shot off in a way that could, you know, really deliver that tying three. And because of it, they end up being champions. And there's just so many little moments like the LeBron block on Iguodala's
oh.
Steph Curry hitting that three against Steph Curry, or Kyrie Irving hitting against
yep.
Steph Curry, you know, then Love being able to stop Steph on the other end. I mean, it's just all those little things
yep.
It felt like that game was back and forth at the end, and they didn't score from, like, the 4:30 minute. To
I know, 4:39, nothing, and they got 2 points in the last nearly 6 minutes. I mean, and this is a team that lights it up all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the best offense in the world and the best system, and they handle it so well. And the Cavs, who were inconsistent on defense all season long, just found a way to stifle it.
Yeah, and you meant it was very well put about Love. I mean, did he look ugly? Yeah. Was he tripping all over himself? Yeah, but somehow he didn't go for a ball fake. And Steph admitted post-game, I think his best comments, you heard him, he said, "I settled. I shouldn't have done it."
Yeah.
He said he took four, they missed their last nine. He missed four of them threes. And sometimes he gets a real pass on criticism for bad shots.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tough to judge him with good and bad shots because
you're right.
He's a shooter we've never seen. So the shots that we've been conditioned to know are bad shots. They're not necessarily bad shots for him, but there were a couple of times where, he forced up without being squared up to the basket, not being balanced, and just trying to get. And I think he said something to the effect of, like, look, we kept looking for the knockout punch in the fourth quarter instead of just playing. And you're right. I mean, that ties into him saying, like, he settled for shots and they settled for shots. And that turnover where he flipped it behind his back on the sideline for almost no reason. I mean, that's just, like, there's just all those little things that add up to the Cavs being the champions and the Warriors being second best.
Yeah, and I love Kerr, reckless kind of, that fine line between aggressive and showboating and reckless. And, third quarter, they're in charge. And all of a sudden, these little soft passes, Thompson had one or two turnovers. Curry had a couple just weak passes in where their bodies, and all LeBron did was, his hands were involved, their hands were active, and those are turnovers, and they go the other way, and instead of an 8 point or 9 or 10 or 12, it's all of a sudden it's tied, and then the Cavs are leading, and it just looked like, I don't know, that style, sometimes you just got to buckle down, and I think the Cavs were a little bit more hard-nosed.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you can't say enough about the leadership job that LeBron did in the final three games. His numbers in the final three games are ridiculous. It's like 36 points, 11 rebounds, 9 assists, 3 steals, 3 blocks. He shot 50% from the field, 42% from three. I mean, these are stupid numbers you can't even put up in a video game. And somehow he did it on the biggest stage with their backs against the walls in an environment no one's ever come back from. No one's ever come back from 3-1 in the finals. He did it with 2 wins at Oracle. I mean, the list of accolades should just keep going forever with how great that performance was.
Yeah, that was a great point. They won twice. I mean, Golden State lost 3 times all year, season and playoffs, before losing back-to-back at home in the most important games. And his stats were huge. And I think the coaching staff at Golden State fell into the narrative of let LeBron shoot, but they never took the ball out of his hands. I thought the guys on ESPN made good points in the postgame that, at some point, maybe it was NBA TV, I don't know, it was Isaiah and 3D, I don't know exactly, maybe Stephen Smith, somebody was saying something about got to take the ball out of his hands at some point. He just went back-to-back 41s on you, and then he's the guy orchestrating everything. You got to, find a way to make someone else, like the way they made Harrison Barnes beat them, and he couldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And early in the series, they were going under every screen. LeBron could not hit a jumper.
Yep.
But then once he starts hitting a jumper, I mean, there's just nothing you can do. Like, I mean, he's the size of Karl Malone. He moves like Russell Westbrook. And then when the jumper's falling,
You
have to force the ball out of his hands. You have to make other guys beat you, and they just never allowed that.
All right, so I've been banging on Harrison Barnes for about a week now, and I thought, he's going into a free agent, and he cost himself, clearly, somebody will overpay him, but he cost himself millions, 5 for his last 32, 3 for 15. You mentioned the game when Draymond was out. He played 38 minutes, 2 for 14, 1 for 6 from 3. And by the way, nobody's covering him. He's getting wide open looks, Zach.
Well, I mean, J.R. Smith last year did say that open shots are boring, so maybe Barnes, maybe he just got bored with all those open shots. Jeez. And find a way to hit them. This is the crazy thing about this. What this summer is going to be, with as much money as there is available and as little, there aren't very many quality free agents out there. And he's going to get paid. He'll probably get the max, which is insane. Somebody will pay him the max, and he's good. Like, he's a nice player. He's better than he played those final three games, but he's not anything close to a max player. And then the Warriors have to decide, do you match that contract offer, because they can match anything that he signs with another team. Do you match that, and he's now the highest paid player in the locker room? And that team is very tight-knit. They're very close, but they're still competitors and professional NBA players, and those guys don't like, you know, not the best player to be the highest-paid guy in the locker room. And I wonder how that affects the dynamic.
See, that's a great point. That's maybe lost on some fans. They don't understand. Those things are real. Like, yeah, they're teammates, but it's like Ostertag here when he was making more than Carl. Carl hated that, even though it was a timing thing. Everybody, you know, Steph's making nothing now. He's going to make ridiculous in a year or two. You know, it all comes around and goes around. But I have a feeling if they're rebuilding, if they really address this team, I think, you know, Barnes, maybe they may decide to move him on, because then they'll have money and they can bring in someone they like a little better. I mean, I like Harrison too, but, you know, he in their games when they really needed him, I mean, that Draymond Green game 5 was Harrison 38 minutes. That was his game to step up and really solidify his career. And, you know, he may turn out to be a great pro. I don't know. But it just, you know, when you're team building as they're going to be now, and they're going to be aggressive, you know, Bogut's a decision they got to make. He's been solid for them, but he's getting on. He's had some injuries, and, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. You know, they're going to chase Durant. That probably won't work out. But what do you think of this roster, other than being really good? How much tweaking do you think Kerr and company want to do?
You know, I don't know that they need to do a whole lot. I mean, this team, you know, after, like you said, after game 4, it looked like it was over. I mean, this team looked like they were back-to-back champs, and they were capping off the greatest season of all time with another title. And I don't know that they need to overreact this. Joe Lacob did say he's going to be, you know, as aggressive as ever or something along those lines in the off season. And to me, that means we're going after Kevin Durant. And whether that works out or not, that's a decision that does shake up the core in some way. Now, I don't think it's a mistake. If they can add to Kevin Durant, I don't think it's a mistake.
No.
They'll make it work. I don't think, you know, we shouldn't overthink that. But if they don't get him and they do have to make that decision on Harrison Barnes, you know, someone like Kent Bazemore, who they gave up on years ago in a trade, and they love, he's turned himself into a really incredible small forward who can play defense, who can hit threes, who can do a lot of stuff. And maybe you try to bring him back at cheaper than what Barnes is going to get, and that actually solidifies the locker room more. I mean, they have options, and they can kind of go a bunch of different ways because of Steph's contract. They have that flexibility for the next year. But, yeah, they've got some tough decisions to make of, hey, was this a fluke, or do we just bring everyone back and run through the league next year?
Right. Where was Zach Harper, CBS Sports NBA, at Talk Hoops on Twitter. Of course, you hear him here Thursdays on Salt City Hoops. Wanted to ask you what you thought of Kerr's performance. I mean, I thought they would kind of dominate the matchup in the coaching world, you know, having been there and done that, and Lou just seemed – but hey, Lou's the one with the title now, and Kerr only has one, and feels like this one got away. Do you think that there were moves that weren't made, or was this just the war of attrition finally catching up to this team?
Yeah, I think maybe a little bit of both. I don't think Kerr coached all that well in the series. I think he got out coached, but I think that sounds a little more dramatic than
right,
it should.
Right.
He had some tough decisions to make, and some of those injuries and stuff, you know, it just forces your hand to roll with options you normally wouldn't. I thought it was a mistake to start the small ball lineup in game 6, just because I think they talked about what a change of mentality it is during the game when they can bring Iguodala off the bench to go small, as opposed to just starting it so where a team, you know, 45 minutes before the game knows, hey, they're starting the small ball lineup, here's how we adjust. And I thought that was a mistake. I thought, you know, some of the minutes Anderson Barajal were mistakes, but at the same time, you got to roll with your guys. You know, maybe he was a little passive at times and trying to find adjustments, but that team played so well all season.
Yeah, why do you adjust?
I get believing that they could find a way to figure it out. And you know what? They almost did. They came really close.
Yep, no doubt. Just wondering about, like, where Love fits in Cleveland now. I mean, I think he's a, you know, on another team, he's still a tremendous player. And you saw his moxie and his basketball IQ last night. He's not, you know, they're not calling plays for him, and he's not really doing what the things that he used to do when he was a dominant player in the league. But he went and got 14 boards and got to the free throw line, and as you said, the defense on Steph late. I mean, the guy's a baller.
Yeah, he can play. And look, all right, this will sound stupid now, but I've been saying it all year, and I do believe it. And I think the Cavs, you know, kind of mess up by making Kyrie the number 2 and Kevin Love the number 3, and now, you know, they've got a championship ring to throw in my face when I say stuff like that. But I, you know, I believe it. I think that he's a better number 2 because he moves the ball, because he is such a great playmaker for himself and for others. You know, they don't have to make a move with him this summer. I don't think they will. I think they'll bring everyone back and kind of see, you know, if they can defend the title next year. But I don't think that means he stays in Cleveland his entire contract. And they've, you know, they could get two or three really good role players who are versatile to help them play that, you know, kind of small ball they did when Richard Jefferson was in the game during the postseason. You know, they can make some moves to kind of add some more depth to the roster. But they still need to figure out how to make it work with him on the floor with Kyrie and LeBron, because they're kind of losing the potential a little bit.
Yeah, last quick thought. We're up against the clock here, but I've talked about the Jazz throughout the show. They say they're open to anything. Of course they are. It's Monday before the draft. They're not going to tip their hand. Do you think it does feel like now would be a time to maybe make more moves with assets, and you know the draft may not present what they want?
Yeah, I think so. But I think the tough thing is a lot of teams are feeling that way.
Right.
There's not great star power at the, you know, deep into the draft. And because of that, I think you'll see a lot of teams either looking to move out or looking to move up and just finding that agreed upon value of a pick, especially in the 12 range. It's going to be tough.
Okay. Great stuff. Look forward to listening to you coming up on the show, and appreciate your joining us here today, and really love your insight. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you. Anytime.